time is 2:05 PM on April 18th. For the record, we have Representative Lancaster, Hudson, myself, Williams, Vice Chair Bundy, Representative Whitaker, and Davies. Today, we're going to hear three bills, and we'll start with 337, reappropriations and capital appropriations. We will not move that today, and we'll hear it. And then Alaska Gas Corporation, it's up to the committee, and 382 will be up to the committee. And is anything, Representative Moses is present. Representative Harris, is there anything to come before the committee before we get started with agenda? If not, I'd like to call the person up here to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
My name is Rob Carpenter with Legislative Finance. I was asked by your staff to do a brief overview of the capital budget. I believe you have before you two pie charts that I put together. The first one outlines the major programs in the capital bill. It's the titled FY03 Governor's Amended Capital Request, HB 336 and 337, $1.18 billion by program. As you can see, there's not much to it other than substantial surface transportation programs in DOT and the airport improvement program in DOT, the DEC Village Safe Water studies and projects, and the municipal matching grants for water, sewer, and solid waste. Another significant portion would be the state matching funds for the aforementioned programs in the surface transportation and the airport improvement program and the DCE Village. I've also lumped together every other program in the other agencies that contain for various maintenance and their special pet projects or whatnot. There's also a Alaska Housing Finance Corporation bond request for their public housing program to do renovation to their major public housing. That's pretty much substantial portions. The second chart outlines the funding. As you can see, the majority of it's federal, $875 million and some change. The rest is broken up into general funds of $114 million, the HFC dividend, 36.4, the ADA and ACPE dividends of 24 and some change, the $55 million mentioned for the HFC bonds, and some other funding of smaller sorts. The match component on the prior chart is $85 million, is composed of about $60 million in GF match, 4.2 in the Investment Loss Trust Fund, 3.2 of the ADA dividend, and $18 million of the HFC dividend, which mostly goes to the Village Safe Water programs. That's about all I had to say. I can take any broad questions if you'd like.
Representative Davies?
Yeah, on the pie chart by program, what I don't understand, why are the state matching funds there, the 85 listed as a program? Why wouldn't they be divided? Are these matching for, did I hear you say, like, for example, for the DOT surface transportation?
Through the Chair, Representative Davies, that's the total match in the capital budget. And you're right, it's not really a program, but I thought it was a significant portion that was related to the rest of the programs in the capital bill. So that's about $60 million of that, or $50 million of that's for the surface transportation program, another 10 for the airport improvement program, and the remaining is split up amongst the Village Safe Water and the municipal waste and water sewer matching grants. And actually, there's another $5 million throughout the rest of the agencies for smaller programs.
Mr. Chair.
So to really be programmatic, it seems like it would have been kind of more consistent to disperse it in those other pieces of the pie.
I guess I was trying to just show the total state match in the capital bill. There's certainly other ways we could display the information.
But, and then, if I, and, but then you said this is a generic state kind of matching money, and it actually is composed of different pieces on this other one that is by program, by funding type, both general funds and HFC and ADA, but they're all ultimately state dollars for used for match. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davey, that's correct.
Representative Hudson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. So then looking at and the general funds, the state matching funds are general funds, all general funds, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Hudson, there are actually HFC dividends used in DEC for Village Safe Water for a match, for the federal match. Roughly $18 million.
I guess what I was looking for, Mr. Chairman, was if the general funds on the second pie graph here is $114 million, how much of that is required in order to attain the federal monies? How much of that is actual match money, and how much of it is extra?
Through Chair Representative Hudson, the general fund match component itself is about $60 million.
60?
Yes. And that's $50 million for the DOT surface transportation program and roughly $10 million for the airport improvement program. There is other funding used for match. Like I was saying, the HFC dividend is used in DEC for Village Safe Water. And actually, the DOT uses just a couple other smaller funds for the surface transportation program to meet the total need.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. Next, we'll go to the gas bill, 302. Representative Whitaker, anywhere you please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With your indulgence, may I ask my staff to join me for the benefit of Representative Bundy? There may be questions that even she can answer.
I think you have that backwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you're ready, and with your indulgence, I'd like to proceed. House Bill 302 is an act that will form the Alaska Gas Corporation. The purpose of forming the Alaska Gas Corporation is several. The first is that by owning an Alaska Gas Corporation, we can ensure that access is guaranteed to any would-be competitor. The second reason is that in-state usage will be assured without significant argument or negotiation. And the third is that revenue accruing to the state will be substantial. In addition to that, it should be noted that the purpose of this bill goes beyond those several issues. An additional purpose is to provide a motivation to the industry, simply to say, if you don't, we will. I think that's a valid function, something that we need seriously consider. And the third reason that the bill has importance at this time, although it was not an issue at the time that the bill was introduced, is that there is an initiative that has been introduced. Signatures have been gathered, and I am very concerned with that initiative. And I need to be very open and upfront about this. I think the initiative will significantly muddy the water with regard to an Alaskan gas project. And I say that because the initiative is restrictive with regard to the routing and the process. The initiative is restricted to Prudhoe Bay, Valdez routing, and LNG processing. As we all know, many people, both in the industry and in the state, have been working diligently in an effort to build a project that will traverse Prudhoe Bay through the interior of Alaska to the Canadian border and to the North American market as pipeline gas. It should be noted, too, that House Bill 302 does not preclude any option with regard to routing or process. It keeps all options open, and therefore I think is preferable to a route restrictive effort. Having said that, I am prepared to answer questions. I am prepared to be as in-depth as the committee would care to be. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any questions for the sponsor at this time? Representative Harris, then Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Whitaker, you mentioned that this could replace the initiative that's been proposed for the ballot. I guess it's been certified by the Lieutenant Governor. Do you have an opinion that this particular bill, the way it's written, would replace that or would take that off the ballot?
Through the Chair, Representative Harris, we do. There is an legal opinion provided by Jack Chenoweth, who has many years of experience with regard to oil and gas issues, as well as a long legal career. His opinion is that he sees no reason that the bill as it currently exists would be found to be other than substantially the same.
Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Whitaker, what power would this corporation have to compel the sale of the gas by the leaseholders on the slope? I mean, there's been this chicken and egg problem of we can't offer it until we have it, and we can't get a project until we can offer it. What does this go anywhere to solving that difficulty?
In my opinion, it does, through the Chair, Representative Croft. The corporation acting as subsidiary to the state in all probability will have any number of powers that are inherent to the state, including the right of eminent domain. And I'm sure that with a legal mind, one could find a number of other compelling opportunities for a corporation of this nature.
Has the majors taken a position on the bill?
They will have to speak for themselves. I have heard no opposition. In fact, in somewhat confidential conversations, have heard that from the industry, given that this is the lesser of two evils, this or the initiative, they would prefer this. But again, they'll have to speak for themselves. And I think they would prefer not to, and quite frankly, I don't blame them. This is a very politically sensitive issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim, this is the first I've heard of this legislation, the first time I've witnessed it. I'm assuming that it's already gone through resources, the gas committee, special committee on oil and gas, and I see a zero fiscal note. What are we buying with for nothing in this instance?
Well, through the Chair, Representative Hudson, what we're buying is an opportunity to do something that is in our own best interest. The bill essentially allows the legislature to come to an absolute determination as to the viability of state ownership. Given that it comes to that conclusion, a significant amount of money will have to be spent in order to bring the project to fruition. And so while we are attaching no fiscal note to the current legislation, there should be no misunderstanding. If a decision is made by the legislature that this is the course of action we want to follow, then significant amounts of money will have to be spent.
Through the Chair, aren't we going to need some funding, even at this phase of it, to try to, you know, to describe it and outline it and to do the research and that type of stuff? I know this is an extremely important, probably the most important piece of legislation that, you know, we'll have seen since we actually went into the construction of the oil pipeline. I'm just curious as to why we wouldn't have sufficient funds to give it the right kind of attention.
Through the Chair, Representative Hudson, I think it's fair to say that the work that has been done by the Special Committee on Gas Pipelines and Bear, excuse me if I don't have the title exact on that, but nonetheless, there is a joint committee of the legislature that has been dealing with this subject for the past year. they have done significant work and have spent significant amounts of money. In addition to that, there are a number of other data and information sources available that can be drawn from at virtually no cost. My understanding of the basis of the zero fiscal note is that it is understood that there are sources of information that are readily available that can allow for a reasonable decision to be made.
And when would this be pulled together and presented so that we can really see a bill of essence?
Mr. Chairman, if I might make a characterization correction, this is a bill of essence, even though it has a zero fiscal note. The timeline associated with the bill is that I think it's the first 30 days of the second session of the next legislature. At that point in time, a decision will have been made and forwarded to the legislature.
Okay, thank you. That's my question. Thank you.
Representative Lancaster.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Whitaker, do you see some, sort of leading on Bill's question, do you see some marriage or partnership between the potential of the railroad bonding and this corporation? I mean, is that how you're going to get there?
Through the chair, Representative Hudson, I would hope that that is an avenue that is pursued. I say that because there are significant savings to the project associated with the tax-free funding mechanisms. The study that I have before me, prepared by consultants to the Department of Revenue, indicates that tax-free financing mechanism can reduce the tariff up to 18%. That is a substantial competitive advantage and one that I would hope is taken advantage of.
Representative Davies.
Thank you. The use of the joint committee, clearly that's the place where the work would be done in getting to this stage of the presentation of the specific plan of action. I should know the answer to this, and I don't, since I'm on the joint committee, but when does it terminate by its present terms, and does it require separate action beyond this bill for it to continue in existence to carry out this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Davies, I don't know if it is required through separate action. Then I think it's incumbent upon us, assuming the passage of this bill, that we would take that separate action.
But I think that also answers the question that Representative Hudson had. You know, that committee has expended significant resources to date. Well, I think, to do this would require additional legislative expenditures. Since this is a Department of Revenue fiscal note, that's why it's zero. It's not that there wouldn't be money spent. It's just that it won't be spent in the Department of Revenue. It would be in our branch.
Any other questions? Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I might add, if I may, I did call Scott Hayworth, the petitioner for the statewide petition, and alert him that this committee would be hearing this bill today. I don't know if he has contacted you or not, but I felt that it reasonable that he have an opportunity to present his views on the subject. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, on that point.
Yes, Representative Bundy.
Well, yeah, if Mr. Hayworth is going to comment, but I just read the news story and would be interested in your reactions to his notion that if we would pass something, he would bring suit. Of course, anyone can bring suit any time, but you're not a lawyer and you don't play one in the legislature, but would you care to comment about this?
Through the chair, Representative Bundy, I would simply say this, that I think that it's reasonable to have honest disagreements, and if it takes litigation in order to determine the outcome of those disagreements, that's the way the system works.
Thank you. Representative Croft.
Oh, you're going to get away, did you? I'm looking at Chenoweth's memo of January 21st, page 4, where he lists the substantive differences from the initiative. And I understand that the main, the principal ones being that it doesn't limit us to LNG and it doesn't limit us to the All-Alaska route, both of which I hope get adequate consideration, but it may be appropriate not to limit it. But then he lists six more, and I guess I wanted to ask, there's a difference in the size of the board, qualification of the board, duration of the terms, compensation due, legislative confirmation of the board members, the legal representation of the board. If, as the drafter of the bill, Representative Whitaker, what were the reasons for having those other substantive differences? It would seem to me you'd want to narrow it as narrow as possible so that it was just up to the court to say whether saying LNG and others and All Alaska and others, and those were the only differences. Why those seven?
Through the chair, Representative Croft, the bill was drafted several months before there was discussion of an initiative, so that it should be pointed out that the bill was not drafted in response to the initiative. And certainly it's possible that those minor differences could be adjusted and not affect the essence of the bill, and I'd have no objection to that.
I'd like to look into that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions?
Yeah, before we went any farther, I just wanted to welcome. We've got Robin here. She took Marta's place, as you recall, helping the Finance Committee. She's got her father here today, Reverend Gable from Mat-Su, and he's going to give a prayer tomorrow in the House of Representatives. I just wanted to welcome him here and to see how what important work his daughter Robin does. So thank you for coming.
I guess that means we have to treat her a little nicer.
there could be some Helen Brimstone.
We will go to Scott Hayworth. Scott, are you there?
Yep, I am, sir. Thank you.
Do
you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Okay, thank you very much, and thank you to the committee members. I am Scott Hayworth, and I am the lead sponsor of the Successful Citizens Initiative for the All Alaska Gas Line. I'd quickly like to read the 99 words that were certified by the Lieutenant Governor, agreed to, and approved by the Attorney General of the State of Alaska, which appeared on all the petition booklets, and its exact wording will appear on the ballot on November 5th, if I may. This bill would create the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority as a public corporation state. The authority would acquire and condition North Slope Gas, construct a pipeline to transport the gas. The authority's powers would include buying property or taking it by eminent domain and to issue state tax-exempt revenue bonds. The gas line would be from Prudhoe Bay to Tidewater and Prince William Sound, and the spur line from the Glen Allen to the South Central Gas Distribution Grid. The authority would operate and maintain the gas pipeline, ship the gas, and market the gas, should this initiative become law. Lieutenant Governor, on legal opinion from the state's Attorney General, certified this precise ballot and language. That is why the initiative is called the All-Alaska Gas Line. The initiative doesn't even use the word Canada in one place in the underlying bill. I've also, of course, looked at Mr. Chenna with this, I think, 7 or 8 page review. I'd just like to say that Mr. Chenna's argument is based on the totally false, one of his arguments, there's many, is based on the totally false, and I say that false, premise that the initiative omits overland domestic North American market considerations and focuses on overseas shipments and opportunities for in-state use. Quite to the contrary, this project is always contemplated delivering Alaska North Slope gas to the U.S. West Coast as liquid natural gas. As you may know, there are 18 new proposed receiving terminals on the West Coast right now to take our LNG gas. I just want to point out some differences in the bill. I've got HB 302 beside me, and I've got the initiative beside me. I'm certainly a little more familiar with my own initiative, but they're fairly similar. This is true. On page 3, that's called of Mr. Whitaker's bill, it's Chapter 41, Alaska Gas Corporation, Section 41.41.010, Establishment of the Corporation. My initiative says the same thing, except it's called an authority. He has number 1 and number 2, and this is all that it says that this establishment of the corporation is going to do. It's going to, 1, the design, construction of the project and the operation and maintenance of the project. Listen to what mine says. The acquisition and conditioning of North Slope Natural Gas, the design and construction of the pipeline system, the operation and maintenance of the pipeline system, the design, construction, operation of other facilities necessary for delivering the gas to market and to South Central Alaska, and the acquisition of natural gas market share sufficient to ensure the long-term feasibility of the pipeline project. Those are significantly unsimilar in every aspect. You go to his page 14, and my page 12, if you had it, under Article 4. Excuse me, it's Article 5. This is very interesting. His is called General Provisions, while mine is called Project Construction. It's a big difference between provisions and construction. Under definitions of project, under his says project means the gas transmission pipeline together with all related property and facilities to extend from the Prudhoe Bay area on the north slope of Alaska to the interior of Alaska, and from there either along a route approximate to the Alaska Highway to interconnect with a gas transmission pipeline in Canada, or, and now it comes in my part of the initiative, to Tidewater or Point on Prince William Sound, or both. Mine says nothing about Canada. It is strictly about building a pipeline down to Valdez. There's nothing substantially similar about that, ladies and gentlemen. And then if you go, my last one here, bear with me. On again, under Chapter 41, mine says the acquisition of natural gas from the North Slope and its delivery to Tidewater for shipment to market by the authority is an essential government function of the state. Now, I also read this article that I heard Mr., I think, Bundy or someone talk about that was in the Juneau Empire yesterday morning, and I couldn't agree more that what Mr. Whitaker's bill is a study. It's a continuation of more studies. My initiative and what the people, 42,000 voters voted on, or excuse me, they're going to vote on it. They signed the petition because they want a project. And in the, quoting from the Juneau Empire, the bill, this is Mr. Whitaker's 302, the bill calls for the Joint Committee on Natural Gas Pipeline to prepare a report and feasibility study on the proposed public corporation. That's all it is to do a study. And I'm not surprised that the industry would have told Mr. Whitaker that it's the lesser of two evils to take a pipeline if they get this to go to Canada instead of Valdez, because we know that the industry is adamantly opposed to anything to Valdez. And why is that? Because Alaskans are smart enough to know that we're going to get the revenues this time. We're going to do right on the gas line what we didn't do right on the oil pipeline. And that is the underlying crux of this situation. I'm not sure which representative asked, but it was a great question. Where's the fiscal note that goes with Mr. Whitaker's bill? And let's get right down to it. Well, it says zero. It's not going to take much money to do a study, which is all 302 is about. But I'll remind you, if you don't know about it, I have a fiscal note from Mr. Condon from the Department of Revenue to my initiative, and that number is $250 million. Why? Because it's a project. There's a substantially similar difference there. So I would say if the House and the Senate somehow think that this is similar, which it is not, in any part of your imagination it's not similar, you're going to force me into a position that if Lieutenant Governor Ulmer pulls the initiative, I'm going to have to sue her, and I will do that. And this is ridiculous. This is the will of the people, and the people are not going to be fooled by this. Every single person I talked to signed this initiative because their number one comment was, this is the one that keeps in Alaska, not go to Canada, right? I said, yes, that is correct. He said, give it to me. Let me sign it. That's why I got the signature so easy. Alaskans don't want to go to Canada, no matter what the industry wants, no matter what the governor wants. We want our project in Alaska. We go to multiple markets. So there is no way these are significantly or substantially similar. Four lawyers helped me write this initiative. I've already contacted them, and we're at work already. So I'll be open to questions. I'm sorry that I have to be so adamant about it, but it's a ruse. There's no similarity between these bills. It will not hold up in court of law.
Are there any questions for Representative Bundy?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Hayward. I guess I don't understand what the problem is. The legislature can pass legislation, and if you have a disagreement with the lieutenant governor, I guess that's where you'd take your discussion. Are you suggesting that that you're using that to try to persuade persuade us that our legislation should exactly match you, and if we don't, then you'll sue? And
no. No, Mr. Buddy, I'm not. I have no problem with HB 302. If you want to go ahead and pass it, that's just fine, and go ahead. It has nothing to do with the initiative. But if then the lieutenant governor decides that it's substantially similar and she pulls it from the initiative, then we have a problem. I don't have any objection to 302. You go ahead and pass it. If the Senate and the House want to go on playing this game with the oil companies and do a bunch of more studies that strands our gas for another 25 years, you go ahead. The citizens of Alaska are going to pass this initiative, and we're going to build a gas pipeline. So we get the value-added resources down to Valdez. We build the petrochemical plants, and we get all the money. What's going on with that pipeline to Canada, ladies and gentlemen, is it's a bullet pipeline to take our resource straight to Alberta, where the big petrochemical plants are, and strip all of our hydrocarbons out of it, take all the money themselves, strip it all the way down to Chicago, and when it gets to Chicago, they're going to get gas. It's called methane, and everybody else has taken all of our money. This petition is to keep our value in Alaska, and that's why the people of Alaska are going to pass it. So no problem with 302. Go ahead if you wish and do another study, but we're going to put the petition on the ballot, and we're going to build a project. We're going to offer the gas to the market, not do a study about it.
Thank you.
Representative Davies and then Hudson.
Thank you. Scott, you mentioned the number $250 million, and I guess you concur with that, more or less.
It's a joke. Of course I don't concur with it. He's throwing in, Mr. Condon threw in that we'd have to put the $100 million up front to buy the permits, if that's the value with YPC in negotiation. We'd have to buy the gas at the wellhead up front, and I don't know how many other things he put in there. He has no idea how a gas project goes together. My estimate is maybe $1 million to $2 million. Senator Torgerson guessed $3.5 million. That's a far cry from $250 million. Mr. Condon doesn't understand how a project goes together. But that's what his fiscal note is to my initiative. So if his fiscal note comes back that House Bill 302 is $250 million, then that would be the first substantially similar thing that they're equal to. But I really doubt that that's what the commissioner is going to come back with, because a study, which is what 302 is about, does not cost $250 million unless you're the oil companies. Then it's $125 million, the one they won't share with you or even release to you folks.
So let me then restate my proposition here. So you think that the correct fiscal note for your project is $1 to $2 million?
Right, because maybe up to $3 million. All you're doing is putting hiring the professionals to put the project together, to go to the market, to go to the producers, make an offer at the wellhead, then go over to Asia and find the sellers, and then put it out to the market. You don't have to buy anything. It's all on contingency. Everything comes after the project is put in place. Put the financing together, go to Wall Street. If the project sells on Wall Street, boom, we start a project. That's when you start owing people money, not before, as Mr. Condon tried to present it.
Okay, one last question. When I ask you what happens, you know, when we go through this process, and you had, I think it was when you were testifying in front of the Joint Task Force.
Yes, sir.
I ask you what happens if your initiative passes, and then we do the analysis, and at that point it's determined that it's not feasible. And I think, as I recall, your answer was, well, then, you know, that's what you were after, was a serious determination of feasibility. Is that still true?
Representative, that's true only because of this reason. Until someone steps forward and offers the gas to the market and offers to buy, which has never been done, that's why it's still stranded, we're not going to get to that answer. And if you want to keep on doing studies for another 25 years, go ahead and do it. Pass it, 302. It doesn't matter. I mean, the oil industry just did their study. Why is everybody pushing for this Canadian route? You don't hear the producers pushing for it. Everybody but the producers. Isn't that interesting to anybody but me?
Yeah. Thanks.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you. Scott, first of all, let me thank you for taking the initiative. Obviously, you've got something in mind that all the rest of us would like to see as well. This is the Finance Committee, and so some of the questions that I've been asking have been to try to understand, you know, how the cost estimates are going to come to be, and then ultimately what proposed line represents the maximum return to the people of Alaska, because that's our constitutional responsibility to manage our resources in a manner that will bring the maximum value back to the people of Alaska. You have apparently decided, at least through your initiative, that it ought to be an all Alaskan to Tidewater and nothing else. This other bill, the one that's competing at least before us at the moment at any rate, 302, doesn't make that assumption. It leaves that question open to further review. And as someone who doesn't have that answer myself, I'm having a hard time figuring out why you wouldn't be complimented by virtue of maybe the ongoing works of this particular study. I mean, it seems to me like unless you've got an absolutely ironclad understanding that you could convince people like myself and others who have to appropriate the money, even if your initiative passes and it's going to cost millions of dollars, regardless of even if it's on $3 to $4 million, it's still going to require an appropriation, I believe at any rate, from the legislature. And so it seems to me like it would be important for you to bring us along and help to convince us what is the best way for the state of Alaska to proceed for the maximum return. Am I wrong in my assumption, Scott?
No, you're not wrong, Representative Hudson, and you, my mind flutters through so many different ideas and ways to answer it. Where the trick is, where the game is being played with the industry is what you should be doing is demanding the studies, which they won't release to you. Why is that? If they just spent $125 million on a study and they need $17 billion to indebt our railroad to put the money into a foreign country and they need a tax incentive down in Washington to pay $1.25 a million cubic feet every time the price of gas goes below $3.50, which can be up, it's been reported that maybe a $30 to $50 billion boondoggle on the back of American taxpayers, and the industry won't give you the numbers, and yet Yukon Pacific, which is the people that own the permits, and they're the ones that have released all their figures, all their projects, been right up front with you, all the numbers, have had it verified by Credit Suisse Bank out of Boston, and have done all this, and while the industry doesn't do anything, and yet we want to study it further, there's not much more convincing to do. The numbers are good, the numbers are solid, this project can go forward, and it's not. And there's tons of people that are waiting for this initiative to pass and get on with this and get this project going, and they're industry experts. And we can join hands with BP, Phillips, and Exxon, any one of them, to help us work on this project. But you've got the questions, Representative Hudson, are to ask, where's the study? Where are the industry players? Where are the producers with their proposal to build this $25 billion pipeline to Chicago, which you said, if your job is to protect our resources, you must understand this one more time. It's a bullet line. It's a bullet line like they take our salmon out of here without processing, our wood out of here, our fish, all the stuff that we have, our coal, everything, we don't add it on. If they can get this gas off the North Slope and straight down to Alberta to their petrochemical plants and strip out all the hydrocarbons, that value added is a multiple of 24, sir. When you go to polyethylenes or polybutanes, it goes to a multiple of 44. We've got to keep the gas in Alaska. That's why this is so important, and Alaskans understand it. The jobs are not in Canada for Alaskans. The revenues are not in Canada for Alaska. They're in Alaska.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions for Scott at this time? Thank you, Scott.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate all your hard work on this issue.
Are there any more? Do you have anybody else that you'd like to bring forward?
Mr. Chairman, I do not. If there are other questions, I'd be happy to answer them. It is an in-depth subject. It has been studied a great deal. I might point out that I do not disagree with very much of what Mr. Hayworth has said. There are different approaches. My emotions are such that I agree that it's time that we take control of this and move forward. However, the rational side of me says, firstly, we probably as a state don't have the expertise to do that. Secondly, we probably don't have the political will right now. Thirdly, given that we are absolutely certain that the economics work, and we may have the political will, and we can go buy the expertise, I think we're trying to get to the same place. It's a question of which gets us there sooner. My conclusion is that the approach associated with House Bill 302 does that. And that's after years of careful consideration.
Is there any more discussion on this bill? Any more questions? Representative Bundy?
Well, just under discussion, and I guess perhaps would encourage a response from Representative Whitaker. one of the things I hear most often from the public is that we have too many state employees. And it seems like Mr. Hayworth and Representative Whitaker are proposing state gas line dynasty, and for those of us that have watched the Department of Health and Human Services function with such a high level of efficiency, I'm not sure that's some place that I'm really enthusiastic about going. I do note that Representative Whitaker's bill has a zero fiscal note, while Mr. Hayworth had potential of several million dollars, and while he may have an initiative for that, he cannot appropriate by initiative, and so we have had more than one law on the books that we have chosen not to appropriate support for, so I'm not sure where we're going with either one of these, and I understand the impatience, but we have a lot of people in Alaska impatient with world economics and how it affects a number of our products.
Representative Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is not my intent to build a state gas line dynasty staffed with thousands of state employees. It is my intent to provide the state the opportunity to assert its ownership obligation and manifest that ownership obligation through a corporate entity that will provide for a basic infrastructure transportation system through ownership, not through management. We have better entities more able to provide that function on a contract basis, not through construction. We have entities that are more capable than anything that the state could hope to put together, but rather through ownership in much the same manner that the state is the owner of the Permanent Fund Corporation. It is an ownership role utilizing expertise services. That is my vision, and given that we present ourselves with that opportunity, I hope it comes to fruition.
I think the Permanent Fund Corporation is a good example. Unfortunately, we also have another example, and that would be the Alaska Railroad, and that's interesting. Sometimes they work and sometimes they don't.
Mr. Chairman, to reiterate, it's my intent and my vision that the Alaska Gas Corporation would have as a corporate model the Permanent Fund Corporation as an ownership entity.
Representative Croft?
I apologize for the conceptual nature of this, Mr. Chairman. Is this the time you want amendments, if any?
We can go to amendments. Do you have an amendment?
Yeah, whether you want it or not, is this the time for it?
Yes, this is fine. Are there any amendments before us?
There! I move a conceptual amendment. We have findings and intent in Section 1. Section A is findings, Section B is intent.
Could you state that again?
Yeah, I just move that we add to the findings section a finding that legislature...
What page?
Well, it'd be page 2, just after line 14, so at the end of the findings section. The legislature finds that this is not substantially similar to the initiative that's on the ballot, and add to the intent section, so that would be the bottom of page 2. It's not the intent of the legislature that this replaced the ballot initiative.
I'll object to that for discussion purposes. Sponsor, care to...
If the maker of the amendment could let us know what his intent is and the rationale for the amendment, I would be most appreciative.
Representative Croft, speak to your amendment.
You know, I think both of these are aiming towards us starting to assert ourselves as a state and as Governor Hickel likes to say, an owner state, but a state that has that responsibility. I don't know yet whether I don't believe that they are substantially similar now, though I could use some more education on it, but I wanted to bring this issue out because I'm very loath to pull things back that the people have expressed an interest in voting on, and I take the sponsor of the initiatives opinion very seriously when he says that the main thing that got people to sign it was that it kept it in the state. So I think we should be clear that I am for this in its own right, but I am very nervous about it pulling things off the ballot. So I'd like 302 to stand on its own, and I think those findings and intent go some way to allowing this to be out there in its own freestanding capacity and separate it from the question of whether or not it preempts anything off the ballot.
that, you know, there is the Constitution says that we can do that, and my feeling is that if we can make it better, you know, there's going to be 28 of us or 27 of us that would vote on this, or at least, let's say, 21 of us that would pass this, and if it was similar to what the bill is, or to make the initiative a lot better, I think that's what we'd like. I don't think that either Representative Whitaker or Scott would want to see anything that is not going to work. And going along with what Representative Bundy said is that, you know, we can have an initiative go through and this legislature or the next legislature would choose not to fund it. And then where are we? I would like to think that we can make either or better so that we do listen to the people, because there's 42,000 people out there. Representative Bundy, then Davies.
Well, knowing full well the immense power of intent language, it's pretty well ignored at most levels. But there is the separation of powers thing. I think here that whether this would take something off the ballot or not is not our decision. It's the lieutenant governor's decision. And we might ask her pretty please don't do this, but she's going to do what she does and has every right to. And I don't see how we say we didn't intend this to be a duplication, and she determines it is. What purpose our intent language serves?
Representative Davies, and then.
Thank you. Well, I think I agree with the amendment because I do think that we should do what's proposed in here, and I think that the what's proposed in here is to do a feasibility study. And the initiative process is really kind of a statement from the people and from some other folks saying that we've seen all your feasibility studies, and every time you guys do a feasibility study, you determine that this project is not feasible. And what they're asserting is the only way to determine whether the Crudo to Valdez LNG project is feasible is to take a proposal to the market. And that's the project. The project, and I take it in the initiative's terms, is to take a real proposal to the market. That's what we keep hearing from a number of people who want to get into that Asian market and also perhaps the West Coast market, is that the only way to know whether or not it works is to put together a real proposal and take it to market. And I think that's the essence of the initiative. And I don't think that is contained within 302. And so I think that, and I think, you know, I mean, who knows what's going to happen and what the motivations and everything are, but I think that there's a substantial enough question about that if we attempt to remove the initiative by virtue of this bill, that we will be sued. And so I think we ought to try to avoid that. I think that if the initiative goes forward and this bill goes forward, that they complement each other. And so why wouldn't we want to send a strong message to the lieutenant governor that that's what we intend? So that's why I support the amendment. I think that both this work within the legislative branch and the direction that we would get from the folks if they in fact vote for it are consistent. And I don't want us to get wound up in some big lawsuit in the meantime. I think we should spend our energy and our money moving the ball forward. And I think that this amendment would help us avoid that entanglement and allow us to deal with those issues once we've done the analysis here. Maybe when we do the analysis, we'll find out the initiative is right, or maybe we'll find out it's not. But for whatever reason, we're going to have to take a decision at some point in the future about whether the initiative is the right way to go or not, and because we're going to be faced with an appropriation issue. But why prejudge that, trying to take that off the ballot? Let's just move both down both tracks simultaneously and not waste a lot of time and energy arguing about which one's right at this stage.
Representative Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are a number of arguments that can come into play here with regard to the proposed amendment. And they take us back to the notion that while substantially similar, the two approaches do indeed have their differences. One is prohibitive with regard to route selection, and the other is not. It would be unfortunate, given that a substantial and real opportunity were available as a result of a route selection that is dissimilar to the initiative, that we could not take advantage of because of it. We should keep all of our options open. Specifically to the amendment, I would prefer to stay out of that dogfight and simply move ahead. The notion that all we are doing is a feasibility study is incorrect. The assumption inherent to that is that that is the end. That is not the end. That is the beginning, assuming a positive feasibility. And at that point, we will have a mechanism to control our own destiny with regard to this vital resource. That is the intent, and the mechanism is established to do that. I do speak against the amendment.
Any more? Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at this thing and trying to figure out what the timeline is going to be. If the initiative is approved, it'll be approved in November of 2002. And it will, if it is approved, it will require an appropriation that wouldn't take place until after January 14th of 2003, during that first session of the 23rd Alaska Legislature. The bill that we have before us, however, 302, definitely calls for the conduct of the study and would result in the presentation of that study on January of 2004, a year later. So, you know, the question is the timing off? Should we have the study come earlier so that it coincides with the initiative? If the two are going to ride side by side, and this bill calls for the conduct of a study over the next year and a half or thereabouts, or 2 years, I suppose, then the initiative is going to call for action. We wouldn't want the action to prevent, you know, perhaps a different outcome or a different direction that the study would show us. So I'm trying to figure out, and that's the reason I asked Mr. Hayworth whether or not the, if they didn't complement each other, but I can see they don't, because the action called by the initiative comes a year earlier than the outcome of the bill's product, as I see it. Am I right or wrong?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davies and then Whitaker.
Well, I think you're wrong in one significant way, and that is the passage of that initiative does not require an appropriation.
Correct. But it indicates one.
Well, it contemplates one. But there, you cannot appropriate money by initiative. And so this legislature, on the passage of that, assume it passes, then we're faced with a dilemma. Do we appropriate money or what? And I submit to you that if that initiative passes, what we will do is we will do a feasibility study of that project. And we will determine on the basis of that, we will appropriate money for the feasibility study, and we will determine on the basis of that feasibility study whether or not we ought to appropriate any more money. And so that's why I suggest there's hardly any difference in these two approaches. And in fact, they are going to, in the timeline for those two things is going to be substantially similar.
Pretty close.
So why get involved in a big lawsuit up front?
Representative Whitaker.
I nearly agree with everything that Representative Davies says. Why do we want to get involved in a big lawsuit up front? That is not the purpose of House Bill 302. House Bill 302 was put in place long before the initiative was proposed. And in fact, I might add that it's very similar to House Bill 170, which I introduced the first day that I stepped on the floor of the State Capitol building in 1999. We do not have a situation wherein one would preclude the other based upon anything we would do. The Lieutenant Governor is going to have to make that determination. And I agree with Representative Bundy that we should not step over that bound. She'll have to make that decision, not us. My concern, though, with the initiative is that it is route restrictive, and we should not preclude any market opportunity that is available to us. That's my concern. What the Lieutenant Governor does with that is her business. But this bill, in my opinion, should move forward. It is a very positive step.
Representative Bundy.
Well, back to the amendment.
Thank you.
Again, intent language is worth all the ink it takes to write it. It might make Mr. Hayward feel better, but I think it has no influence on the Lieutenant Governor. And it may be used as in some court suit, and whether people choose to sue or not, we have no control over that. People file suits every day, both legitimate and righteous, and others less well-founded. We have no control over that. So if we want to do something feel-good and put that amendment in there, I guess we can. I just see it accomplishes very little, nothing. I have not personally talked to those 42,000 people. I got it, but I think it's fair to assume that there's some that signed it just to make the petition gatherer go away, some that signed it and said, I'll sign most anything because I want everybody to have a chance to vote on it, and some that signed it after carefully studying the issue. What the outcome of that will be in a general election, I'm not as brave as to try to predict.
Going to call for the question?
The question on the amendment is still, it's a feel-good thing, and if that's what makes you feel good, vote yes.
Call for the question.
Representative Harris.
Yes.
Representative Hudson.
No.
Representative Lancaster.
No.
Representative Moses.
Yes.
Representative Whitaker.
No.
Representative Bundy.
No.
Representative Crock.
I don't feel good.
Yes.
Representative Davies.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Williams.
No.
4 yeas, 6 nays.
Amendment is Representative Whitaker. Do you have an amendment?
I do, Mr. Chairman. I have two amendments. The shorter of the two amendments, the one related to page 15, line 4, merely updates the bill and provides for the 23rd legislature to review the findings. Page 15, line 6, is related to the same subject, merely updating and ensuring that it is the second session of the 23rd legislature that reviews the findings. And I would move amendment number 1.
Amendment number 1 has been moved. Is there any objection? If not, so ordered. Amendment number 2, Representative Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment number 2 allows for the, which relates to the bill on page 16, line 13, following directors. I'll read it, if I may, Mr. Chairman. The governor shall appoint the initial members of the board of directors of the Alaska Gas Corporation under AS added by section 2 of this act, not later than 30 days after the date of submission of the report to the governor under section 5A of this act, and only if the report that is submitted to the governor concludes that construction and operation of a natural gas transmission pipeline project as defined by statute added by section 2 of this act by a public corporation is feasible. Essentially a technical amendment and cleans up some language.
Any objection to the amendment? If not, so ordered. Are there any more amendments, Representative Lundy?
No, an amendment. There's a question for the sponsor.
Okay.
On page 3, line 29, Governor may remove members of the board for any reason. I mean, it seems that not for cause or something. It just may remove them. And if they did something the governor didn't like, or they
have a sense of that. Mr. Chairman,
Representative Whitaker.
The answer to Representative Bundy's question is yes. We have a very powerful executive in the state of Alaska, and if we want to insert some cause language and the governor wanted to find a cause, I'm sure that he or she could do so. I think, though, that it's important to remember that the people that we elect to public office are expected to be honorable and have reasons for their actions, and they will be held accountable appropriately.
Mr.
Representative Bundy?
Well, I think we've gone through this with some other public bodies where they serve at the pleasure and there's a concern about cronyism or whatever, and I would like to offer a conceptual amendment that would insert in the appropriate place, may remove for cause.
I would not object.
Any objection to that conceptual amendment? Not ordered.
May I have another question?
Representative Bundy.
On page 4, line 23, the executive director, with approval of the board, can select and employ staff as necessary. Just a question of whether you felt there should be any sideboards on that. See some pretty substantial staff if people chose to use it.
Through the chair, Representative Bundy, again, anything that's put before you is subject to sideboard amendments. Again, I know what my vision of the corporate entity is, and that is that it be as small as possible and provide an ownership function only. However, having said that, I do not have an objection to reasonable considerations.
You have a amendment?
I don't know. I don't want to, off the top of my head, try to craft something. Maybe in further conversations with the bill sponsor.
Are there any more questions?
I'll be fine with that. Question?
Representative.
Oh, we don't have any questions.
Representative Foster?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and move out HB 302 as amended with individual recommendations and the attached list.
Any objection? Not ordered. Next, we'll hear from Representative Gill, 382.
Railroad is such. And again, you can around that.
Representative Guest?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In front of you is a working draft for the CS4 House Bill 382. I don't know if you need to adopt that before I continue or not.
The L version?
The L version.
Chairman, I move that we adopt the CS4 House Bill 382 L, Ladderback 41702 as a working document.
Any objection? Not ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The purpose of this bill is to ensure that clandestine labs are cleaned up before they're reoccupied. The current situation in Alaska is if, for example, a meth lab is busted, the law enforcement agency sends a letter to the residential owner, and that's where the process, and they put up a sign that says this happened on the building, and that's the end of the process. The state has never set up guidelines of how these labs should be cleaned or tested or ensure that they'll be safe before they're reoccupied. So what happens is one of two things. Either you have a residential owner who doesn't necessarily care if it's cleaned up, and therefore they might vacuum and paint and reoccupy it so you could rent an apartment that was a meth lab and not know. Or you have a residential owner who does really care, and there's no guidelines or direction in the state to help them clean that up. In one case in Juneau, they ended up gutting the apartment. They couldn't take it to the dump because it has hazardous material. So they ended up burning it and then, of course, being fined for burning hazardous material. So there's just no direction right now in the state. What this bill tries to do is set up a process to deal with these situations. It first says there must be notice to the owner. And then the owner has two different options. They can test and see if there's fitness, if there's not the four substances in the residence, or they can just go straight to decontamination. If they think it's so bad, they don't need to test first. They just can go and clean it up. The DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation, will set up the regulations and the guidelines for both testing and for decontamination, basically to ensure qualified individuals do both of these. They also keep a list for owners so they know who they should contact to both test and to decontaminate. There's four substances in the bill, lead, mercury, methamphetamines, and volatile organic compounds. We set those in bill but allowed the levels to be done in regulation given that science constantly changes and it's more appropriate in regulation.
In the building?
There is a section...
Yeah, come to your desk right away.
There might be someone who's on there. There's a section that discusses ensuring that the property is secured and that if someone knowingly rents or leases or occupies, it's a Class A misdemeanor. The new version that you adopted today has a section that says this law wouldn't take effect until the regulations were in place, since the regulations set the level of the drugs. And then I put in your packet a series of information, the health effects of mainly meth labs, some other questions, the letters of support from municipalities and law enforcement, and also the questions come up of why in DEC it's more of a health and safety matter. It's cheaper in this state to have it through DEC because they already have the structure in place than creating another bureaucracy in the Department of Health. With that, I know DEC is here to answer questions on the fiscal note and any other questions. APD and the troopers were going to be try to be online as well.
Yes, Representative Foster, before we go further here, I think I'll hold this bill in committee and talk a little bit more about it. Representative
I wanted to thank Representative Guest for this bill. I wasn't aware that this was in the hopper, but I even co-signed on it. I appreciate you coming up with this concept. I just wanted to say thank God I don't have this problem up in my area.
Move it.
And, but you know what? When the session's over and they send me back to Nome, the round trip runs about $1,000 for me to go to Nome. It would be more if I lived in Savunga or like Carl Morgan lives in Antioch or a good friend over here. Hey, Dak. You're talking a lot of money, and that's not even including per diem or anything. And I think if we did have this problem, that this system would have to be adjusted because the $12,000 here for the 13 meth labs that you've got right now would probably address Mat-Su or Anchorage or Juneau, like the case here. You've got a sample case here. But I think the fiscal note would probably have to be adjusted at some time if we ever have this problem in rural Alaska. But I do agree with the bill. I like it, and I've signed on with you, and I thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Foster. Through the chair to Representative Foster, this bill does not say that the state will clean up or ensure a residence is cleaned up. That solely falls on the property owner. The state is not taking the responsibility. But what this bill is doing is says that the state will set up the guidelines to ensure a residence is safe before it goes in. So there is no fiscal note. And my intent is not to have the state being cleaning up properties, but for the accountability to be with the residential owner where it should be. And that's why it's a $12,000 fiscal note to set up the process and $2,000 for copying and communication with residential owners from that, and the department can speak to that.
Thank you.
Any other Representative Lancaster?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, Representative Guest, have you done any looking into whether this is going to have any changes to the Landlord-Tenant Act? How that's addressed for egress and access and so on?
Online is Nathan Johnson, my aide, who works in Anchorage. He's probably best, we have looked into that, best to answer that. Nathan, could you answer that question, please? Is he online?
Who is it?
Nathan, in Anchorage. They're not online anymore. From our, oh.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Could you restate the question, please?
Yes, I'm interested in what kind of effect this is going to have on the Landlord-Tenant Act, that there'll have to be some changes for access to apartments and disposal of, or whatever the case may be that could arise for rental properties.
My understanding through the research is that it'll have no impact on landlord-tenant law because this is going to be an act of the state. If we prohibit future use, the relationship or the legal one will be between the state and the tenant and the owner.
Any other questions for the sponsor?
I don't know if there's testimony online or not. There was earlier.
We have Janice Adair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for the record, my name is Janet Sturm, the Director of Environmental Health at DEC, and I'm just really online to answer questions.
Okay. Mr. Grimes, Lieutenant Grimes?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. I have just a few comments, maybe a little bit of background that I would offer. And we did submit a fiscal note of zero for this bill. Lieutenant Grimes, I'm representing the Department of Public Safety. And we believe this is a very good bill, very necessary. In the last year, law enforcement has certified an additional 50 police officers to certify to safely investigate and dismantle these clandestine labs that are producing the end product of methamphetamine. The investigators that do these responses to the labs don't enter the labs without Nomex clothing, full breathing apparatus, and other protective gear, so that the evidence that they are seeking can be collected without the risk of their exposure to the dangerous chemicals. And law enforcement does not ever attempt to clean up the lab site because it can really only be done properly by hazardous materials experts from the private sector. As an example of just how dangerous these sites can be, once the removal and disposal of the toxic chemicals is done, though, that is really not the end of the contamination. The chemicals used to produce methamphetamine, and I guess I could go back a little bit. These labs are not commercial, professional-type labs. They're clearly labs set up in single-family homes, multifamily residences, apartments. You'll find them in storage units, trailer homes, and you can find these all over the state of Alaska. People cooking this product are untrained. You can find recipes on the internet, in books, etc. And the chemicals that they're using can be spilled. They soak into the carpet, the felt flooring. There's toxic residue that's absorbed into the walls, the furniture, and the ceiling tiles in the places where the product is being manufactured. So reoccupancy of the residences does present a potential for chronic, kind of long-term exposure to low levels of what are very corrosive chemicals. Inhalation and skin exposure and respiratory exposure can certainly cause injury. Children that end up in these places that spend a lot of time on the floor are particularly vulnerable to the exposure. I think that this legislation, we believe that the legislation seeks to fulfill the obligation that we have to protect public health and property owners that may be unaware of how dangerous this is, or perhaps choose to ignore how dangerous the inherent dangers that their tenants are exposed to when they reoccupy the contaminated site. Law enforcement currently complies with the notification requirements that are in this bill as they parallel federal guidelines. And, of course, this would continue if this bill became law. So I just believe that there are some very good reasons for this legislation, and Department of Public Safety does support it.
Thank you. Ed Bryant?
Yes, this is Ed Bryant. I'm a detective with the Anchorage Police Department Metro Drug Unit. I don't have any questions for the sponsors. The only comment I would make would be to echo Lieutenant Grimes so far as the urgency and the interest in protecting public safety. And my other comment would be that particularly in rural Alaska, those communities that are involved in fisheries that have canneries or cannery processors close by, those are also very susceptible. The chemicals that are used in the manufacture of methamphetamine in these clandestine labs are readily obtained from another number of sources, mail order, et cetera. One of the more toxic, immediate toxicity is what I'm talking about, more of an acute exposure as opposed to chronic. One of those chemicals is anhydrous ammonia, which are found in most of the canneries. So even the rural communities are going to be affected by the manufacture of this drug. And the labs that are found, and we attempt to disassemble and dispose of.
Thank you, Mark. Mark Woodward?
He'll be right here.
Ready to move.
bill, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, we'll move this bill.
Today?
Yes.
Today?
Well, maybe,
Quiet, Ken.
I'll move it if you want. We've got a couple more people.
Hello, this is Sergeant Woodward.
Yes. You have any comments?
Just that I support the legislation. I think it's, finally going to put some responsibility where it belongs, and it's going to protect a lot of people, innocent people that otherwise would be subjected to toxic and hazardous materials. But I think what Detective Bryant shared with you is more than I could. Technically, he's far more knowledgeable than I am in the field.
Thank you, Mr. Woodward. Tim Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Rogers. I'm Legislative Program Coordinator for the Municipality of Anchorage. I think Lieutenant Grimes did a very effective job of identifying the risks and hazards involved with these drug labs, and identified the extensive training and equipment that is used by law enforcement agencies. But at the same time, there are really no safeguards for the general public. I think this bill adequately addresses that problem. It does impose some additional costs or potential additional costs for property owners for the cleanup. However, we feel that the safety issues for the public far outweigh the additional costs to the property owners. And the municipality does support this bill, and just want to go on record as supportive of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Representative Bundy?
Yes, question for the sponsor or perhaps some of the police officers online. It's my illusion or impression, at least, that this is a growing problem, and I'm wondering what's the trend been over the last 2-3 years as far as meth labs in South Central or in Alaska in general. Is this a growing problem? Is it something we have to, at the legislative level, try to do something more about?
This is Lieutenant Grimes, and I can give just a brief answer to that, and then I might defer to Detective Bryant, who is actively working in meth lab enforcement. Alaska law enforcement basically took heed of some of the experiences of different parts of the country, the Northwest and the Midwest areas of the United States, which had serious problems with methamphetamine labs. And because it reached Alaska a little bit later, we had a little bit of a heads up, and we took a very aggressive stance. And when I say we, I mean not only Alaska State Troopers, Anchorage Police Department, but any law enforcement agency that found themselves effective, chose an aggressive stance toward detecting the labs and eradicating them. The number of labs has subsequently dropped from 50 in year 2000 to just 21 in 2001, and I do not have any more current stats than that. So if that gives you an idea, and if, again, I defer to Detective Bryant for any more detail.
Oh, I think that answers it, and I appreciate the positive report and the good work you're doing. It just seems like at least weekly you read in the paper about another meth lab being busted, but that's apparently because you're doing your job, so thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Are there amendments to come before? Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify at this time on this bill? Not, we'll close public hearing. Are there any amendments to the bill?
Yeah.
Representative Foster.
Yes, sir. I'll go ahead and move HB 382 out of committee with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Any objections?
Or PB, I guess. That's correction. So.
Any objections to the motion? If not, bill moves from committee. For tomorrow.
I did want to say that this is the best bill I've seen come through the committee here this year.
I thought we'd try to work on them.
The rules, Chairman, work on them. Huh?
Yeah. Better bill than the one that's been sitting here all year.
You know, they get better as you.
It's a mirror. You come here to make your comments. The other bill.
There won't be a meeting tomorrow.
Yay, Billy.
And we'll be meeting Monday afternoon at 1:30. Is there anything more to come before the committee? Nothing more to come before the committee. This committee stands adjourned.
Hey, thank you, Billy.
Cool.